Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
We got to move now to the phone lines where one Eric Wood is joining us as he made it safely back to his home. He drove back from Kansas City to Louisville last night after the game, and he joins us now, Bills radio color analyst and host of the Centered on Buffalo podcast. So, Eric, good to have you with us. Glad you got home safe and sound. Maybe your overarching thoughts on how this game unfolded and, you know, where you might rank the Bills' level of play, the Chiefs' level of play, and the officials' involvement in the outcome of the game.
Yeah, I'll say this. I mean, it's a tough one. It's a tough one today, you know, because the opportunity was there. And if you would have said, we can get the ball back with 3 minutes and 30 seconds left and all of our timeouts, and we're down three with a chance to go tie it or win it, you might take that and just roll the dice and say, our offense can go make a play in this situation, especially if we've already scored 29 points. So you feel like the defense for Kansas City would be susceptible to give up points. I'll say this, the Bills started off bad, both sides of the ball. So you go three and out to start the game on offense. Josh did not look in rhythm at all to start that game. I didn't mind the first play call. You know, you have, you know, Josh with a, you know, QB read, but he's going to his right. So if he wants to throw that left shoulder in there, kind of get settled into the game. You know, Josh has said before he likes taking a shot early in the games to kind of settle himself down. So they give him one on first down, and then two bad decisions, bad, you know, not great throws on the next two. Lucky to not have an interception. You punt the ball away and you give up 7 points. Just a nightmare start. But, you know, something that's been kind of synonymous with this team throughout the year is their resilience, the way they fight, and they fight all the way back in it to where they take the lead in the second half and put themselves in a position to win it. But, you know, I just had Ryan Fitzpatrick on my Centered on Buffalo podcast, and we were talking about, you know, how each team played, and you almost feel like if the Bills would have won that game last night, you would almost feel like they stole one. Now, they had injuries in the secondary, but, you know, beyond James Cook, was there a position group that outplayed a position group on the Chiefs? And I'm not sure there was. And so, you know, it's tough that you end the season in that way at Kansas City again, but it just didn't feel like, and I didn't go into the game thinking that the Chiefs had overall this physically better team than the Bills. But at the end of the day, you know, some of the matchups they were able to attack and all that led to the Bills losing. And I'll get to the officials in 1 second. I also think what a gutsy call by Spags on 4th and 5 with the game on the line. You blitz a corner, which because of the reduced set by the receiver, you were able to do that. It's only a 5-man protection, so you can fire him, and there's no running back to get him if you fool the O-line and the quarterback on the protection scheme. But look, if you're a defensive coordinator and you run a corner blitz in that situation and we have a beater on that side, you might be fired today if they lose that game. Andy Reid might say, enough's enough, Spags. You're out of here. Like, we can't have those types of calls. Instead, he's the hero again. And so that's unfortunate that that didn't work out and we weren't able to work it back to Shakir, maybe, who likely was the hot throw on the play. And then, you know, Kincaid doesn't come down with it, but that's a tough play in that situation. It is what it is. Should he make the catch? Yeah. I mean, he said it after the game in the locker room, so I'll go with him. But in the moment, we weren't thinking, oh my, it didn't feel like the Mark Andrews play from a week ago. And then the officiating last night was frustrating. It's been frustrating a lot this season, but you had the Cole Bishop play where the ball hit the ground. That goes in Kansas City's favor. On the QB sneaks, I believe Josh got the fourth and one. It looked like it. I've seen still frames of it. I've also seen still frames of the alignment of the defense, and it looked like the way they were able to stop the sneak was the guy to the right of the center. So the QB sneak always goes to the left. The guy to the right of the center would line up essentially offsides and just barrel in to Connor McGovern's side so that he would get washed into the mix, and not making as easy of a sneak for Josh Allen. So
that was Chris Jones doing that.
Thought it could have been a penalty before the play on Kansas City based upon their alignment. And then I thought Josh got it, but ultimately you just can't let it come down to a call like that.
Yeah. And there was an answer even on the fourth and five where he tried to get it to Kincaid. Shakir was uncovered out to the right, but Josh, because the play got there so fast, Josh would have had to almost sprint to that side and just kind of shovel it to him. He instead runs to his right and can't find Shakir. Shakir would still be running, and that really would have changed the game. So the answers were there in that play, even against that blitz. But because the pressure got there so fast, Josh had no way to make it happen.
Yeah, you're right. And you expected, because there was a timeout before the play, you expected Spagnuolo to fire a blitz on that play. And unfortunately, you know, I heard Connor McGovern say after the game he wishes he would have sent the protection that way. But corner blitzes for a center, those are almost impossible unless we have some type of tell, like we have a shaded nose where there shouldn't be a shade here. Okay, what's fishy over to this side? But unless there's an indicator like that, it's really difficult for, you know, a center and even a quarterback to pick up that the corner is going to come in that situation. And Reed ends up coming free as well. It turns into like a free safety corner blitz. And they got him, but I'm with you. He had the answer to Shakir the other way, but I don't know what Josh's progression is there. So it's so easy for me to sit here today and say, well, if you swing that one out to Shakir, he's able to get 6 yards at least, continue the drive. But I don't know what his progression is there.
Yeah. Right. And as admirable as it is that they're able to erase an 11-point deficit, climb back into this game, and actually take the lead at one point in the second half, when you look at the thing in totality, you can find bits and pieces of this game where Buffalo's execution wasn't at the same level as Kansas City's, who was pretty buttoned up from front to back. Yes, Brian Cook should have had an interception that he dropped. They had the fumbled exchange on the read option play with Mahomes, and that led to a turnover. There might be one other play where they did not look like they had it all lined up. I think there was a miscommunication on a pass play with Mahomes and a receiver. Outside of that, I mean, the execution by the Chiefs was airtight, and for the Bills, it wasn't. And in games like this, that can mean all the difference.
You're right, and it just looked easier throughout for the Chiefs. It did, and some of that's the injuries in the secondary. And early on in the game, the Bills were running some zone defense, and you know, you were seeing those play-action quick hitters, and then Bills would get the man, and then whether it's an audible or play call prior, you know, they're getting to those rub routes, and they were giving the Bills fits on those rub routes at the second level, you know, in man-to-man coverage. So it just seems like they had the answers built in throughout the night. And I'll give the Bills defense credit. You know, when the game was on the line, they got the stop down in the red zone and forced them to just kick a field goal. Give them credit there. There's a number of plays they made throughout the day. They forced back-to-back punts to start the second half, which were absolutely necessary when you hadn't forced a punt in six quarters. And so you get in the locker room, you regroup, and you force back-to-back punts, one of them being a three and out, and they lead to points for the Bills, and you're able to take the lead. But ultimately, and they were put in some bad positions last night too, based upon, you know, Chiefs take over after the failed sneak attempt at the 40-yard line. They had the long punt return, but it just seemed easier for the Chiefs throughout the game last night. to move the ball offensively.
Yeah, and this is a Chiefs team that this kind of goes by the wayside because we're, you know, the Bills fans and this team has been on the wrong side of it for 4 years in a row, but they're two overtime AFC championship game losses away from going to seven straight Super Bowls. It's an all-time run that the Bills are trying to interrupt, and once again are a hair's breadth away from getting it done. Put into context how unbelievable this Chiefs decade or this last 7-8 years has been for this team. Can you even contextualize it?
It's tough to, you know, the thing that almost impresses me most is, yes, there's constants in Travis Kelce and Chris Jones, Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, there's constants there, but there's also so much movement around them. You know, Patrick Mahomes early on, it's Tyreek Hill, it's Mecole Hardman, it's these speedsters on the outside that put so much pressure on you, and then they run the ball when you spread everybody out on your defense, and then it turned into, okay, well, we're going to trade away Tyreek Hill, put all those resources into the defense. We're going to go have a top five defense now. Patrick, you need to elevate everyone else's play offensively. Yes, Kelsey's still there, but, you know, and then they invested a lot of capital into their interior offensive line. Second round draft pick at center. You know, they have two of the best guards in the league now. Trey Smith was a great draft pick, later round draft pick for them. But, you know, where does Patrick Mahomes hate pressure? Right up the middle. Okay, we're going to try and give him the best interior line in football, and they likely have. And so it's amazing how they've evolved this thing. And then, you know, it just, the thing that impresses me most and what sucks about a day like today is you got to start all the way back over.
Yeah,
you don't get to start in the wild card round. You don't get to start in the divisional round. And Steve, I know I'm preaching the choir with you because, you know, the resilience that you guys had to three times get off the mat get back to the Super Bowl is unbelievable because, I mean, you're gutted on a day like today. And at this point, yes, I'm a former player and I have strong relationships on the team, but I'm the color commentary guy. You know, I do content for the Bills organization and I'm gutted. I mean, imagine the guys in the locker room, the coaching staff, the front office that put so much time and effort into it, and you got to start over. That's the hardest part. And with the Chiefs, what's so impressive is they come off of a Super Bowl championship and do it. You know, it's like there's no contentment there, and they get better and better. And at this point, there's almost a comfort level, I'm sure, in these big games because they've just been there so many times. And where we're talking about slow starts, they're saying, here we go, business as usual.
Yeah, especially when you're talking about the one possession games, because they've now won 17 one possession games in a row. That's an NFL record, and it's still intact right now. So they just feel comfortable in those moments. I wanted to get your perspective on this because I was trying to explain to a couple of people that I felt like the Bills, because of the slow start, spent the rest of the game chasing the game. And I wasn't able to explain it eloquently enough in terms of the extra effort that players have to put forth when you are chasing the game and trying to make up a deficit. It's almost like you're not just playing the opponent, but you're playing the scoreboard and trying to fight, scratch, claw, and strain to make enough plays just to climb back even. Can you just kind of, from a player perspective, explain, you know, what extra effort is involved when you're chasing the game?
Yeah, I mean, you find yourself down 11 in the first half, and you have one possession before the half, and the Chiefs are going to get the ball coming out of the half, you're looking at yourself thinking, okay, this isn't do or die right now, but it's pretty close to it. We need to make a play. Credit to the Bills, they do. They put a nice drive together, and then Mac Hollins comes up with a great touchdown grab. Josh put that ball on the money. Yeah, I saw the Bills put something out. He had 0.5 yards of separation there. And so, you know, all that being said, you know, you feel like in that moment, like the game's almost on the line, but it's only the second quarter. And so it puts pressure on you. And then you add in the crowd noise and the difficulty in communication. It just becomes a, you know, an emotionally and obviously physically stressful game based upon the slow start. Give the Bills credit, though. They were getting gashed in the run game early. Then they completely shut down the run in the second half. You know, the Bills started executing, you know, way better fairly early in the first half and then got back to the run game to start the second half, go on a 12-play scoring drive where the one play is a screen they throw off of a run play. It was just a little quick hitter because Kansas City stacked the box. So give the Bills credit the way they were able to adjust. But yes, when you start the game off as bad as they did, you know, you're in the second quarter and you feel like it's almost do or die.
And you get in there where the stuff happens, the score comes down the way it does. The Bills, both teams score four touchdowns. They score one field goal, and the difference is in two-point conversions. And it comes down, you know, when those conversions happen, when they're not, and I was all on board with both of them. The analytics say you're 50-50 on fourth down on two-point conversions. If you try eight of them, you're going to make four of them and miss four of them. Well, if you miss one, that means, like, you're due, right? So, I get
and those
it.
analytics are based off of the league averages, yeah. Not the number two scoring offense in the league with a unicorn at quarterback.
That's right.
So, I'm with you.
I was totally on board with both those decisions, and I'm shocked they couldn't get one of those. And I'll say this too, Eric. And I'm all about the play selection and all the red zone. That's a player's miss right there. You know, the two-point conversions are players, I think, both on defense and on offense. You got to make a play. The play is designed – it's going to work. There's no space. You got to do what you got to do, and it comes down to you guys up for the big guys up front and if you're going to run it or if you're going to throw everything. And, the play selection being what it was, I mean, you just got to know you're going to have a chance to do it. And those two missed two-pointers, you know, you come down to a play like a game like that, that's it. That's the difference in the game.
No doubt. And, I mean, even as for those watching along with us, watching these QB sneaks, I mean, I don't know what kind of preparation they did, what kind of talks they had, but this was an automatic play for the Bills, 21-22 on the season. You know, Kansas City hasn't stopped a QB sneak attempt in their last 32 attempts prior to this game. And I don't know what they did game planning wise, how much attention they put into this. But really, when you look at it, between the two-point conversion and the failed fourth and one attempt, I mean, that's a lot of the game came down to QB sneak attempts.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, give them credit for executing in those instances. I mentioned it earlier. You know, I don't know all the ins and outs of how they coached how to get that done, but with Josh always going left, it looked like on the still frame that I saw from the aerial view, they were lining up and they were saying, look, press the line up offsides if you have to, because make them call it, because both teams are crowding the line, so a lot of times, as long as you're not touching somebody, they don't call it in that situation. And so they taught to just barrel into Connor McGovern's side and try and just tighten all the gaps on that side just based upon using his momentum. That's the only thing that really stuck out to me, other than they had guys going low up front and guys going higher in the back. And, you know, me and Brownie were talking about in the broadcast, like, well, what do you do off of that to get them? Well, you can't do the push look because you're too crowded there at quarterback. You almost have to get to the QB sneak out of a regular set, regular looking under center set. So then you don't have to push anymore, but then it's not as obvious, and you could always get to the run.
Yeah, or right. Just spread everybody out and give Josh more space to work out on the edges somewhere. Yeah, they were complaining about Chris Jones lining up in the neutral zone on those plays, and that's why they even went to that hard count late to try to get him to jump. He didn't. So that's that. Eric, thanks for your input all season long. We appreciate it, and we'll catch up with you down the line here in the off season. Enjoy the downtime now that the season's complete, sir.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's always fun coming on with you guys, having some fun, start off the week.
All right, so that's Eric Wood joining us, as he has done on every Buffalo Football Monday. All right, welcome back to hour number two of One Bills Live here on a Tuesday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, and we welcome in at this time ESPN's Dan Orlovsky, NFL analyst, and Dan's appearances are sponsored by Caesars Sportsbook, an official sportsbook partner of the Buffalo Bills. So, Dan, you know, we got to rehash Bills Chiefs here, and I really feel like we always hear the cliche, it's a game of inches, this and that. Short yardage was a big part of swinging this game in Kansas City's favor. And,
even though you have Bills players who during the game were trying to get the officials to back Chris Jones out of the neutral zone, claiming he was lining up there consistently, you don't often see that called when the refs know a short yardage play is coming. All that aside, you see the Bills fail on a couple of attempts. Your thoughts on pivoting to something else when facing those situations again?
Yeah, it's the always the catch 22 of, are we trying to get too cute? Are we overthinking it? You know, versus the we believe in the play. We believe in the player. It has worked more often than not. And in these situations, don't get away from who we are. And, you know, when you lose a game, you're always going to do the Monday morning quarterback, revisit what could have done or been different, what we could have done differently. I had not heard about the, you know, the Bills players having conversations with the officials about Chris, and something that I'll go back and peek at, because I did not see that. You know, it's, there are moments, Chris, I do think where you do tip your hat to the other team in a couple moments as well. Like, they, you know, they get paid and they did make some plays. And I think that that has to be a part of that story as well. So you're definitely, how many different plays do you have in that situation that, you know, they got into a couple of them and used them, you know? So it's always, when you lose, you're always looking back and saying, could we have done something different in that play to kind of have it have worked out more in our favor?
And we can, we talk about the game and chew it up, and now you have the entire offseason to think about it. And when you go into a game like that, and you get to a game, AFC Championship, Conference Championship game, and for me, even a Super Bowl, you go in and you think, wow, what, you know, there's always the reaction to the fan. There's always the fans that say, fire everybody, clean house, change this, do that, get rid of this player. You know, the reactionary is, you know, it's sometimes over the top. But now you're getting to the point now where it's four straight years, you're getting beat by those guys.
Yeah.
Now the Bills, I think, are the one team where everybody kind of thinks, yeah, they got the best shot at it. That's the team who can beat Kansas City. They've proven it in the regular season, and they've had these games that are just razor thin time and time again in the playoffs, but the Bills are always on the short end. What's your general assessment of how much are you, like, abandoning ship or just turning the steering wheel 2 degrees? You know what I mean? There's a difference, right? There's a little. There's just a little adjustment, and then there's, you know, switching out the motor. Well, what do you do?
Yeah. So I think, one, a lot of the talk, and I've heard a little bit of it, but not a high amount of it, the whole, like, start over, fire people, I respectfully think that's outrageous. I think that Sean McDermott had a fantastic season. I obviously believe both coordinators had really good seasons. Joe Brady probably a little bit greater because the offense was so good. I also think they went through an organizational change, the way that they go about playing the game and the way that they philosophically, you know, adjusted that, the way everyone went about it, specifically on the offense. And it was unbelievably successful until it wasn't. You know, Steve, I've said, and you know far greater than me, but, like, I don't think you change anything. I think the hardest part is picking yourself back up and doing it again, and brainwashing yourself to think this time will be different. Cause I think there's a reality in that. And again, you lived it. I don't know if there's a perfect formula. I don't know if there's a magic formula. I don't really believe that. I was sitting there the other day or yesterday with Rex Ryan, and I just kept saying, and I know it sounds, I kept saying, it's shocking to me that in a game that is played with an oblong ball, it hasn't once bounced their way in those moments. It just hasn't once bounced their way. And I think that's the biggest hurdle for them, is believing that at some point will.
Yeah. And at the same time, if you compare this game to the Week 11 game, I don't think where it was played was as big a factor as how the Bills went into that game, because the Bills were the ones playing in front. The Bills were the ones controlling the clock. The Bills were the ones that had time of possession edge. The Bills were running the football well enough, you know, and at the end of the day, they're 30-something passes or 40-something passes, 30 runs in the win back in Week 11, which, by the way, is the only win in against Patrick Mahomes in his last 23 starts, which is insanity. But anyway, my point is, I felt like the Bills from the jump on Sunday were chasing the game. And yep. against the Chiefs, they're too efficient, they're too buttoned up, they're too detail-oriented to chase the game and also try to beat the Chiefs. I felt like the Bills were trying to do two things at once, and you can't do that. All your efforts have to be towards beating the Chiefs, not chasing a game to beat the Chiefs, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you gotta make the other team, the other quarterback, try to play from a place of discomfort. Not like he's going to be unfamiliar with it, and not like he's going to be, I guess, I don't believe he's going to be uncomfortable in that situation, but you can't let them constantly be in the dictate mode. And they were still, for the most part, Kansas City was capable of dictating how that game was going to go. I mean, if you just looked at them offensively, you know, the overwhelming theme early on was RPOs. They were just trying to make sure that they weren't in backed up or third and long or third and obvious situations. So let's be efficient. And they were, and you have to give them credit for that. And I think that allowed them to like settle into the game. Both teams believe we get the game to the fourth quarter, we're going to be okay. And we believe in our guys. We believe in our quarterback to make one or two plays. You know, the thing I would say, Chris, is I think that, you know, when you look back and again, you're trying to find, you know, different plays throughout the game. Oh my gosh, that, you know, I've said it. I think the first down in the final drive for Josh would probably be a play that he's going to sit there and be like, I threw that check down 100 times this year. And just for some reason didn't in that moment.
You're talking first and 10 on that drive?
Yeah, the first and 10 when he throws the ball kind of over the middle field and Romo said it looks like he had thrown it away and there's a miscommunication between him and Khalil. I do believe there's the swing route out there. I watched him throw it last week against Baltimore, you know? And so, and it's hard, but I've seen him do that. And I think control-wise, things that you can look back as a player, that's probably one that Josh is going to sit there and be like, man, I wish I would have just thrown that out there. And then the fourth down, there's been a lot of ridiculous conversation about it, a lot of it that I disagree with because people think that, you know, it's played on this computer. I do think being on the road hurt them in that moment. I believe if they're at home and they're able to use cadence a little bit more, that they probably get a little bit of an indicator off of that. And being on the road and having to go silent count, I do think gave, once again, advantage Kansas City.
Yeah, and when you get into those moments and you know, you do have to deal with the crowd noise and all the things that go into playing in that stadium. You know, it's just, we look at this game, and we've said it a bunch on the show, and I'll bring it up to you. Both teams scored four touchdowns. Both teams scored one field goal. And yet, because of the two-point conversions on a turnover on downs, they fumbled it once. The Bills got two turnovers on downs. All of that stuff is, you know, you can't play these games. Yeah, you can't play these games any more razor thin than they have been played. All four of these playoff games, not the first one. I think the Chiefs won by 14
points. Yeah.
So, but the rest of these games have been razor thin, and the ones that are regular season seem to fall the Bills' way. And the ones in the playoffs that really mean something, and the ones we always talk about, are the, you know, the playoff games. How do you, and that's really the question is, there's 15 plays in this game that if they go the other way, the result could be different. And certainly you can focus on the ones that are late in the game. But did you get an inkling early in this game, particularly when the Bills come out and go three and out, and the Chiefs go rumble 90 yards, I thought, wow, there it is, and this is going to be when the Chiefs finally flex. Did you have any inklings early that this might be a different kind of game?
Well, I do think that Josh came out a little hot, you know, came out a little juiced up, and his adrenaline, it was on fire for sure. I wasn't, you know, when they went right down the field, because I feel like everyone has done that this playoffs to them, I was like, they'll settle in. They're very good at their adjustments. They're too well-coached of a football team. You know, Steve, honestly, I thought they got the ball back. Once Phillips makes that sack, I thought this will be it. I truly believed, you know, and again, you're not supposed to have favorites and bias. I no bigger fan in Patrick Mahomes than me, but also I feel the same way about Josh. And I truly believe like Buffalo is going to go down and score, and they're going to do it perfectly. They're going to milk the clock. Josh is going to make a play or two. They'll be super efficient. And at some point they'll make a completion and man coverage. And it just didn't happen. And it was that three or four play stretch that didn't happen for them. But I didn't have an inkling early on that I knew the game was going to come down to the fourth quarter. I think everyone knew that. Some quarterback was going to make a play or not make a play, and that was going to swing the game.
Yeah.
So as you know, as we kind of look ahead for us, like next season and all of that stuff, it's hard not to look at different ways of skinning this cat here because you've tried four times and it hasn't happened. And look, I've got all the respect in the world for Buffalo's coaching staff. I think they're very good, to your point, as you said earlier. They're also going against a one-of-one coaching staff. Andy Reid, yep. Steve Spagnuolo, you know, Dave Taub, even on special teams. I mean, elite of the elite. So you try to say to yourself, well, what's another way to try to overcome that when you're going against arguably the best staff in football? And it's hard not to look at what Philadelphia has done to completely stack their roster with elite talent. And
yes,
that's something that you've got to do year over year. It's not something you can do necessarily in one off season, but I think the Bills roster is good enough where if you can just add one or two elite talent players, maybe just one on either side of the ball, that might be enough to eliminate that razor thin margin where you're just that much behind them. What do you think about that, going the talent route to try to finally get over this hump?
Yeah, so I think there's three things that you could probably realistically say. I think I do agree that there's one piece of elite perimeter talent on the outside. And maybe and when I say elite perimeter talent, it doesn't mean that it's the number one receiver, but another really person that can consistently impact the game. You know, what's the plan with Amari and Keon's growth and all that, but if you can get another perimeter guy to truly impact the game in the skill group, I do think that's you want to consistently push the envelope on that. And I do think it's fair to say that defensively, the high-end talent on the back end did show itself. Benford's injury was huge. And so there is a reality that you can sit there and go, they got to get a difference maker in their back end. You know, Razul is really good. I think the safeties were encouraging, but you got to get a difference maker back there in the back end. I really believe that. You got to go get a Justin Reed or a Trent McDuffie or a Kyle Hamilton, somebody like that in your back on your back seven. And I do think one of the things that I was surprised about as the game went on and really at the end of the game, like, schematically, in those moments late versus that quarterback and that coaching staff, you gotta empty your bag of tricks. And Buffalo really didn't. I remember years ago when they played Kansas City, and I think it was down there, where they would throw some really unique coverages at Patrick, and one side of the field would play zone, and one side of the field would play man. I'd be like, oh my gosh, how do you pay attention to that? Late in this game, I guess the one gripe that I would have with that stuff is they just lined up and played man. Hey, you know, it's 3rd and 9, and they're just playing press man, single high safety, no disguise, no double, no nothing. That's too easy for that right. quarterback and that coaching staff.
And I think the reason why is because of the things that you mentioned. Benford's out of the game.
Wrap is up.
What Elam does what Elam does best is man coverage. And then no rap in the game. You've got a rookie with 4 starts under his belt playing in the AFC yeah. title game. And I think we can all agree that DeMar Hamlin is a little bit on the short end when it comes to pure speed. So all of those deficiencies, I kind of felt like they spent most of that game trying to cover that up, which is why yep. so much was open in the short to intermediate area for the Chiefs passing game.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is... You know, when easy for me to say, hard to do, but also so is trying to beat that guy and that team, you know? And so yeah. When you look at, you know, again, there's different philosophies and schemes, but Spags rolled out like 3 or 4 different versions of double teams on 3rd down. Obviously the 4th down corner blitz with the backside backer to end the game, you know, that stuff, when you surprise I do think it's worth, hey, we got to have this stuff in our bag if we're going to see that quarterback or probably a Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson is you. These guys are so ridiculously good that if you let them know it before the snap, you're so behind. And I do think that, again, trying to push the envelope of no stone unturned, can they create a package that in those moments, maybe they deploy late in the season or late in the playoffs that are so game plan specific for those guys and those quarterbacks that give them a little bit of an even playing field and or advantage?
Are we at this point? We're in an era now where you've got guys coming in, and particularly college guys, and look at the kid in Washington, Jaden Daniels, who just walk in, and they've been playing 7-on-7 their entire life, and nothing really scares him. He's the right kind of personality. He's not this big, strong guy who has to stand in the pocket and get clotheslined like the guys back in the 1970s, you know. So you've got these guys who physically don't look like the quarterbacks of old, but they've got it upstairs. And now the response to this kind of 7-on-7 league is a team like Baltimore who says, listen, if you're going to have 230-pound linebackers, we're going to have a 250-pound running back. Is that the trend we're kind of sitting in the middle of? Certainly personnel dictates it for most of these teams, but for Baltimore and maybe some other teams, it's a philosophical choice they made. And certainly Buffalo, as you mentioned, they went that way this year and ran the ball a ton because they had a good offensive line. You know, is that the trend we're seeing now where you're going to have to make that choice? And if you've got that guy, you know, you can play 7-on-7. And if you don't, get big and get physical.
Well, I think you're going to – I mean, the trend is both. You know, right. I mean, the trend is a little bit in the era almost that you played in, Steve.
Right.
That it was like you pounded the football a lot. But it's also the morph – so it's the morphing of that with a little bit of the spread, you know, passing game that you're seeing and a lot of teams deploy. If you don't have both, it's unrealistic to think that you're a legit Super Bowl contender. You could be a good football team. 14 teams make the playoffs this year. 11 of those are the top 11 – excuse me, 11 out of the four teams in the playoffs were top 14 running football teams in the league. Part of that is quarterback run as well. But, you know, I do think, you know – over the past 2 or 3 years, that has become a trend is you've got to be able to run the football as in comparison to 6 years ago, you could throw it and win it.
Right.
Last one, just your early thoughts on Super Bowl 59 and who you – I mean, that if there's a team that has the talent to beat the Chiefs, it's certainly the Eagles, but just your thoughts on it.
Yeah. Well, it's idiotic to doubt Mahomes. Yeah. I think that's been proven. But it's not my job to just pick because of, you know, and so I've got to try to analyze. And I do think Buffalo had success running the football in certain runs. And I think Philadelphia can do that. I think Philadelphia can spread them out a little bit offensively and allow some one-on-one completions to be had. Because if you can get them into that world, there is opportunity for you. Their offensive line can protect it good enough. Jalen Hurts has been a lot better versus the blitz this year in comparison to last year. And then I think Philadelphia defensively, it is going to be, you know, I said this going into the game last week. They are the number one defense in the NFL when it comes to effort and running to the football and punching at it. And that was huge last week. It'll be huge again this week. They're going to make the most efficient offense in football, who was Kansas City, efficiently drive the football down the field and be great in those situational moments. And if Kansas City can, they're obviously more than capable of winning it. And if they can't, that's when Philadelphia has the advantage.
Good stuff, Dan. Thanks for joining us all season. Appreciate you, man.
You guys are the best, man. I've had a lot of fun with it. And cheer up. Hopefully brighter days.
Baby thanks, steps, man. Bro. Thanks.
All right.
All right, that's Dan Orlovsky joining us as he did all season long. Appreciate his insight and input on the season and the Bills at large.
Welcome back. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. The Bills, as you know, are not going to the Super Bowl. Here to discuss their loss and the sudden arrival of the offseason. It's always seems sudden. Maybe I could have been better prepared. Odyssey NFL insider Ross Tucker. Make sure to check out the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, daily NFL podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Hi, Ross.
Hey, guys. How are you?
We're dealing.
Yeah, we're okay. I'm rebounding nicely today, I feel like. Did you
feel like as you were watching that final possession for the Bills, like that they were going to do it?
Yeah, I did. I did. I mean, I think I told you guys last week, I certainly said on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, I picked the Bills to win the game 24-23. Really thought it was time. You know, I had referenced Steve Young and the Niners not able to knock off the Cowboys, or Peyton Manning and the Colts not able to knock off Brady and the Patriots. I really thought it was time. And, you know, when James Cook was floating through the air, I thought it was time.
What a play that was.
When they had a one-point lead and they had the ball in Chiefs territory or midfield, wherever that was, I thought it was time. It's really, really disappointing, really unfortunate. And I know I'm preaching the choir here. I mean, the people listening right now care about it even more than I do, that's for sure. You know, I know it's my favorite team I played for, but everybody listening right now, it's been their favorite team their whole lives, and they live and die with it. And I was really hurting. I mean, you have no idea how many tweets I had ready, how many thoughts I had ready for after the Bills won. I mean, I had my Labatt blue light ready. I mean, I was ready.
Yeah.
I was very ready. It was going to be my dream Super Bowl. Eagles-Bills,
right.
My absolute dream Super Bowl. My childhood team that I now do some work for, and my favorite team I played for. And we were close, man. We were really close.
In a game so close, there can be lots of different takes on what the difference was. We had a caller yesterday who I thought put it pretty brilliantly, that it was a three-point game, but the Chiefs were kind of better at everything. You know, there was no area where the Bills were the better team, at least arguably. And then talking to our Sal Capaccio yesterday, I asked him, like, why did they lose? And he said short yardage,
right,
which is pretty stunning, Ross. I mean, Allen getting stuffed on 1 yard to go plays multiple times was not what I expected.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you're going to ask about the officiating, and we can get into that. For me, it's pretty simple. You know, they had their opportunities, and they didn't make the most of it. You know, Cole Bishop, I know there ended up being a holding penalty on the play anyway, but I would say the Cole Bishop play to me is somewhat emblematic of the issue. Like, that has to be an interception or maybe incomplete. You can't let Xavier Worthy rip the ball away from you. You know, Curtis Samuel's wide open on a crossing route. He's going to get at least 30 yards, and with his ability, maybe take it to the house. They don't connect on that.
Right.
I know a lot of people talked about the Kincaid drop. You know, the getting stuffed three times on the quarterback sneak is very disappointing on multiple levels. Number one, that they couldn't get it done. But number two, I really thought they got outcoached in the game. Mm-hmm. And it's disappointing. You know, if Tony Romo is sitting there saying, you know, in these situations, they like Mahomes to roll out to the right, and they do it twice and the Bills have nobody there, or, you know, the end of the game, they have a chance to get the ball back and, you know, P. Ryan and Pacheco are both wide open. Or when Spagnuolo comes with that blitz, two guys come scot-free and the Bills don't really have any good answer for it. Even I really disliked even going for that third quarterback, you know, that quarterback sneak after they gotten stuffed a couple times. He's 250 pounds. He when he gets ahead of steam, who is stopping that from getting a half a yard? Unless the Chiefs got penetration on a quarterback power or a quarterback sweep, he's getting it. I did not love them going back with that call again. And, you know, these things all get magnified, obviously, when it's a big game like that. But I thought the Bills had opportunities again. They didn't make the most of them with the aforementioned plays. Felt like they got outcoached, and you know, maybe that's just the way it is.
I think that's fair. I mean, I think everything that that Reed, I mean, it felt to me like Reed really curveballed them with the Mahomes runs. They just were not ready for that at all. And, you know, to be fair, though, also on the other side, if it's not something they've done all year, I'm not sure how ready you should be for it, right? And that's a part of that Spagnuolo blitz on fourth and five at the end, too, isn't it? Like, at least to my ears, the Bills players explaining it said they gave us that look a lot in the game and even in the regular season meeting, but never sent those guys. It was a Trojan horse kind of thing. And well, so first of all,
you can't get to fourth and five. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, number one, you don't want to get to the point where you're out of fourth and five. Number two, you know he likes to blitz. You know he likes to bring blitzes. There's got to be some type of quick answer, even if you don't have it picked up. You know he brings exotic pressure from the secondary. And I don't want to get too complicated. Mm-hmm. I know Fitzpatrick's done stuff and Orlovsky, and it was a nice blitz, and it was a good design and all that. But everybody's got to be on high alert. It's fourth and five. They're going to bring a blitz we haven't seen. It's going to involve somebody from the secondary. And there's got to be an answer to get the ball out of his hands quickly. And it's just very, 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 very frustrating.
Ross, do you have a take specific to Allen here? Like, he was kind of messy early in this game, ends up 29 points, and there was a lot good. And then the ending, you mentioned a few other things already. Do you come away, I'm asking, do you come away with a different opinion about Allen from another playoff loss or no?
Not really. I think he's amazing. I think he's my favorite player to watch in the NFL. I think he's fantastic. I guess the Curtis Samuel throw is the one that stands out to me negatively. But on the list of reasons why the Bills lost that game, Josh Allen is not in the top 10 for me. He's the least of the Bills' issues. He's the biggest reason why they're even in that situation. And it feels to me like, yet again, he'll never say this, but feels to me like he was failed a little bit by the people around him again, unfortunately. And that's the part that really hurts. I don't have an answer for why it seems like the people around Josh Allen and to a lesser extent Lamar Jackson fail them, but the people around Mahomes, it seems like they don't. I mean, you guys, you know, you, we, whoever, you even got the fumble. You know, you won the turnover battle. The Chiefs had the costly fumble, and you still lost. And that's the thing. You know, you win the turnover battle, and you still lose. That's the one that's hard to stomach.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of what they do, it looks great. I mean, what the season they just had, second in the league in points. Defense kind of struggled, though, maybe badly in several games down the stretch. And in this game, the last two playoff games, it took them a long time to bring about one punt from the Ravens and then the Chiefs.
Not,
so
not good enough.
Yeah.
They're not good enough on that side of the ball. There's absolutely no question. You know, to see the Rams put up that many points, to see the Lions put up that many points. You know, the Ravens turned it over three times, and they still should have tied it. You know, they still should have scored 27 points and tied it if Andrews doesn't drop that. That's the other thing. I mean, they easily could have lost that game, right? And then the Chiefs, that's the most points they've scored all year, and they could have scored even more on the last drive, but obviously they were just taking a knee there. They need to get better on that side of the ball, and they need to figure out ways to get better on that side of the ball, because, you know, they had Milano and Bernard in this game. Now, they lost Benford, and maybe part of the answer is they need to get better in the secondary. You know, maybe it's corner, maybe it's safety. You know, maybe it's another D lineman. But I guess I would say, and I like Bobby Babich, but I would say that I think they have better talent on defense than the points that they gave up. I think he does a nice job, and maybe the secondary just had that much of a weakness, but that was one of my takeaways as well.
Yeah, I mean, we're already into, like, you know, where to plug holes and, you know, offense, defense, D-line, corner, receiver, all of it. I said to lead off today, Ross, that, you know, even with you just now at the beginning of your segment with us, like, I'm rebounding already to this extent. Like, last year at this time, they lost to this team at home, you know, one round earlier than they did, but very similar game. Allen with the ball in his hand with a chance to win it, and they couldn't get it done. And same thing happened on Sunday. But last year at this time, we kind of knew. We didn't know they were going to trade Diggs. In fact, at this time, I thought the idea of trading him was absurd because of the $31 million dead money. But they did that in addition to Hyde and Poyer and Tre'Davious White and Mitch Morse. I mean, they turned it over. And I felt like there was going to be more hole plugging than anything else as far as improving goes. This year, sure, there's going to be holes to fill. There always are. But I feel like the guts of the team is more intact than it was at this time last year.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think that I have faith in Brandon Bean to add to it. And for them to be this good this year with, you know, the issues they had with the dead money for Diggs says a lot. I mean, this was kind of supposed to be, I think, a retooling year. So maybe you could say they're a year ahead of schedule, and with some additions next year, that they'll be even better and they'll be right there. I'll say this. I'm a little bit concerned about their psyche. You know, like, how many times can you come up short? How many times can this happen? That's something I've definitely thought about.
So Philadelphia's on a nice roll. 55 points in the NFC Championship seemed good. do you like them in the Super Bowl?
No, I mean,
no.
Look, I was on the sideline, you know, for the NFC Championship game. The Eagles have the best roster. You know, the Eagles have the best team, and it's hard to imagine somebody beating them when Jalen Hurts plays that well. But he played awesome in the Super Bowl 2 years ago, and they still lost to the Chiefs. I mean, I think it might be more therapeutic for all of us if we just resign ourselves to it at this point. Like, it's just like, it's unbelievable. I mean, the Eagles had the best roster 2 years ago, and the question mark quarterback played the best game of his career, maybe, and they still lost. Like, how is that possible? And what I've been saying about the cheat, you know, the Super Bowl is, you know, I love the idea of, I think the Eagles can win the game, but if it's a one-score game, who are you taking? Are you taking Jalen Hurts and Nick Sirianni or Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes? And as good as the Eagles are, I don't think they're going to beat them by two scores. I don't think they're going to blow them out. So I do think it'll be a close game. And in a close game, I'm gonna take, you know, Mahomes and Andy Reid to get it done because they always do. I think on my betting podcast today, the Even Money podcast, I think my co-host, who's the Mass guy, said that the odds of winning 17 straight one-score games is 1 in 125,000.
Yeah.
That, you know, to win 17 one score, because it's basically like a coin flip. Now, he did acknowledge the Chiefs are better than that, so it's better than a coin flip, but still, it's the odds of them doing what they've done are still really, really, really small.
Right, that's the number they've already hit, right? 17, 12-0 this year, last year's last three postseason games.
17 going back to last year, including the playoff games. Yep. And by the way, it's not like they're playing like bad teams. And, you know, like, these are playoff games, you know, against the Bills and the Ravens and all these teams that we know to be very good. You know, and I don't know. I mean, I know we only have a couple minutes left, so I do want to touch on the officiating.
Okay.
Because I did a video about this. I thought Josh Allen on the last quarterback sneak, I thought he got the first down. Now, I haven't studied it like the Zapruder film to see, like, I thought he got to the 40.
Yeah.
And it looked to me like if he got to the 40, it was a first down, right?
Mm-hmm.
What I would tell you is, I got a couple thoughts for you guys. Number one, being on the sideline for the NFC Championship game and being behind the side judge and back judge a bunch. One thing that jumped out to me is with the Eagles doing the tush push, that is impossible. A football field's 53 and a third yards wide. Those guys are in the white. They're not in the green. So they're at least 27 yards away. They don't have x-ray vision, dude. To be 27 yards away and to look through an 18-person mass of humanity and think that you know where the ball is or where the guy's elbow or knee or shin touched down, no chance. Which is why, you know, on the Bills Josh Allen play, you have one guy coming on one side of the 40, the other guy coming on the other side of the 40. What I would say is if that's the case, then the ball should have been spotted on the 40 and should have been a first down. However, the two plays that people talk the most about, right, the Worthy play and the quarterback sneak, they reviewed both of them. Okay, this isn't like the week before against the Texans when they were illegal hits on Mahomes and, you know, they called the flags on roughing Mahomes and then they went ahead and there's nothing you can do about it. They reviewed both and they didn't overturn either one, which means it wasn't that obvious. You know, it wasn't that, you know, I think I agree with Gene Steratore and Nance. I thought Josh got it. But I can also see how it wasn't enough to overturn the ruling on the field. And the same with the Worthy play, which, by the way, there was a holding penalty on the Bills anyway.
Yeah, they were just they reviewed that for boggling to me field position. Yeah.
Like, why did Sean challenge that? I don't really understand. Like, that seems like a no-win challenge in my mind, or certainly not the pros don't outweigh the cons on that one. But I just can't get worked up in it that much about it because they reviewed both. They took a second look at both. And if it was, like, blatantly obvious, they would have overturned it. You know what I mean? Like, it was very clear, either one of those, they would have overturned it. But they didn't because it wasn't indisputable visual evidence. And so, I don't know. I know a lot of Buffalo people. You're hardworking, tough people. You grew up kind of like I did. You know, we were taught personal responsibility, accountability. Bills had a million things that they could have done differently. If you give the ball to Josh on a quarterback power, it's a lot easier for the refs to see. That, you know, if you do the quarterback sneak, you're putting it in the side judge and field judge's hands. Whereas if you run a quarterback power and Josh plows over the 40-yard line, then we're not even having this discussion.
Yeah. Said earlier, don't get to 4th and 5. On that one, it's 2nd and 8. They throw short. It's 3rd and 3. They throw short. And they got themselves to 4th and 1.
Yeah. Well, here on the advice, the life advice, we know you got to go. But what you just said, I think, is the most that the officiating has been talked about on our show in the last 2 days. Just so you know. Like, we're not in here like running that up the flagpole like crazy. Just so you know.
Wow. Well, you're the only one. So congratulations. Right.
Thanks, Ross. Talk next week.
All right, see you guys.
There you go. That's Ross Tucker, Odyssey NFL Insider. Ross Tucker, by the way. Make sure to check out the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, daily NFL podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I don't think that's a very good attitude.
It's Mike Shope.
You don't think? I don't think you should be butting in when I'm talking to my team. You're my assistant, okay? You're supposed to back me up and go get me juice boxes when I tell you. Now go get me a juice box.
You know who you're talking to.
It's the Bulldog.
I'm talking to the juice box guy.
You're crazy.
Well, I'm not crazy. I'm just thirsty.
Why don't you go to hell?
No, you go to hell. While you're there, why don't you grab me a juice box?
I'm no juice box boy, I'll tell you that.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog on WGR Sports Radio 550.
Hi there. Welcome. Already facing some adversity.
Oh, what's that?
I'm using a pen that went through the wash recently.
That doesn't seem
I right grabbed though. It from the top of the washing machine or the dryer. I figured like it was a kind of a success story that the pen, here it is, viewers,
all right,
intact. It's got the ink sort of welled up near the tip, which is, I think, probably a sign that it might have gone through the wash or some had some trauma.
Yeah.
And I just sort of wiped the tip of it a little bit here, and it's all over my fingers now. Black. See?
Didn't it get all over the laundry if it went through the wash?
No, I think unscathed.
That's a miracle.
That it's definitely gone the other way. This is a mistake that I commonly make, is to not empty my pockets before doing laundry. And here was an example, and I think I mostly got away with it. It only cost me the pen. That's a win. But the pen works.
You want me to see if I got a pen on this side of the room you can borrow?
No, it works. It works.
It works.
Just don't touch it.
Well, that seems like an impediment to using the pen.
No, I just touched my eye. There's ink in my eye probably now.
I mean, you can use the pen.
Impediment.
Doesn't seem wow.
Impediment, you mean.
That's it. I got to go.
Brandon Bean playing some Would You Take. Right there.
Yeah, right.
We expect to have Sean McDermott shortly. I don't know if he's wrapped yet with everybody else, but we're expecting him to call us. Bean playing the game. This is one of our games. We had this exact question already this week. Would you take the same 3.5 minutes to go down 3 points in next year's AFC Championship? And he's like, of course. And I think that's the right answer.
Me too, even though I didn't want it 3 days or 2 days before the actual AFC Championship game this time around. But really, because I was probably ridiculously optimistic, given how it turned out. But sure, yeah, I think right now, yeah, I would still, yeah. I
mean, everybody should always want that.
Yeah, I think, we can quibble about whether you'd rather have that game at home. Of course you would. And maybe things are different if that's the case.
Do you think they would be?
I don't know. I mean, they had them at home last year in the same scenario, and we know how that turned out. So
I do, though.
It did. But, yeah, sure. I think, making checks. I don't know. Maybe even that final play is different. If they can hear, if Allen feels like he can move people around more. But that sort of flies in the face of them being surprised by what Kansas City did there. And, the fact that it was, at least the way guys talked afterwards, surprising. It tells you that maybe communicating wouldn't have done any good, because they might have felt like there was nothing to communicate. They're lined up like this. We think we know what that means. And so, okay, hike. let's play the feud.
I wonder what data looks like home and away in terms of blitzing. Because you're feeding off the crowd energy there. I think it's – do you think this is crazy? Like that it would be – you'd be more inclined to blitz more often when you're playing at home. You think that would be right? It wouldn't be a huge difference.
I don't know. I don't think it's a crazy thing to ponder. I think it's even possible that a coach calling the plays could get caught up in the excitement of the home crowd and think like, I gotta finish these guys right.
Yeah,
now.
It doesn't have to go well.
Right, but I gotta. But the noise is a part of it. Like, I think that thought process doesn't have to just be, unfounded, misplaced bravado on the part of the coach. The coach might feel like this is an opportunity to do this because they can't hear. And that could play, sure. So I wouldn't be surprised if there was some subtle difference in blitz percentage home versus away.
I don't know about yesterday, but when I was here Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and doing Matt Collar's podcast today, talking so much about officiating. And really, that alone is why I'd be tempted to say if they had been at home, they win. Because that's really, I mean, that's easily the number one, I say easily, that's the number one proven and provable factor in officiating is who is the home team. It's been studied. Like, there is data to claim that supports that. And I think, if it's a quarterback sneak or if it's just 50-50 calls, illegal contact, these kind of plays, I would sooner think that whoever's home, Chiefs, part of the Chiefs having that, evidence that they get calls is because, it's almost the same point. They're excellent. And with that, they're playing these games at home. I mean, in the playoffs, not last year, but most years, they're only at home in the postseason, and home teams get calls. So Would that have been necessarily the difference in the game? We don't know that. But, yeah, I tend to think that. And it's really, it wasn't unfair, but it's such a shame that the Bills didn't get that for the season they had. Like, for all the takes that are flying around, would anybody be like, you really needed to beat Houston in week five? Because it was, you know, such a great season.
Mm-hmm.
Throw out New England at the end.
Right.
Where they go in 13-3 and there's nothing to play for. That was not good enough to even get them within one. All right. They had to do was tie, having beaten Kansas City for home field, and the season they had was not good enough. One bad night in Baltimore, the close loss to the Texans and the close loss to the Rams, no home losses, and that was like not good enough for home field. Really kind of amazing. Philadelphia, I guess, would be close to the same. I mean, they also won. Minnesota won 14 games and was the 5 seed.
Yeah,
it was one of those years.
They go on the road in the wild card round. I mean, that's some tough.
There were too many bad teams this year.
Mm-hmm.
Too many teams that were really bad. It sort of like stretched out the standings, I guess. But what do you do about it? When are we done with the game itself?
I probably after today, I think. Maybe Friday, we threw the weekend, and it's sort of like it really settles in, right? I mean, what? There's no football this weekend. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Are the Pro Bowl games this weekend? Does that happen
this
weekend?
Yes, of course they are.
So okay, I stand by it. There's no football this weekend.
There's flag football.
There's no football. Although the Shrine game, I mean, I'm watching cut-ups of players at the Senior Bowl. What's going on? Yeah, I'm doing some of that. But yeah, I think once we get through another weekend, and it's Super Bowl week, then I think you're done like sitting with the game that was the previous Sunday.
Last year, that lasted a little bit longer. I was hung up on the events of that last possession last year, and so that dragged out a little bit, but certainly didn't drag on all offseason. Joining us now on the Western Hotline is Bills head coach Sean McDermott. Hi, Sean. Thanks for your time today.
How are we doing? Good afternoon, Shokes. Good to be back with you again and catch up here for a little bit.
Those guys didn't wear you out? I mean, that was a good 45 minutes or more?
It seemed like a long run there, yeah.
As much as I talked all year.
Yeah, I mean, of course, obviously, goes without saying, you'd love to be coaching right now with one more game left, but you're not. I mean, are you eager to get away? What do you do to get away? A beach? A safari? What is your vibe when you, get away from football?
No, it's I am eager to get some rest. It's always when you wrap up a season, there's a lot more to kind of wrap up, tie up, put a bow on, make sure you go into some of the days off where you can go into the days off with a clear mind. So we're still working through that. It'll be another couple of days and maybe in the next week. But when we do get away, what am I? I'm more of a hey, let's tell me where the family is. That's where I want to be, and we'll go wherever they are. And if it's the beach, if it's a lake or what have you, we'll do that. But I don't know if you've seen me of late, but my skin doesn't really do well with the beach quite often.
I can relate.
You're going to need a big hat, I suppose. Yeah, I don't know. We started streaming our shows on video, and I'm trying to figure out why my face always looks purple, Sean. I don't think I'm purple, but for some reason on these video platforms we're on, I look purple. So maybe I need less sun, even though I live in Buffalo. I don't know. I can't really explain it. With like getting away in mind, Sean, the way the season ended at the hands of the Chiefs again, I started saying even before the game, like if it goes the Chiefs' way, it's going to start to feel inevitable that they will beat you when you meet them. How much, if at all, do you feel like you yourself or you, as it trickles down through the organization, need to guard against that feeling seeping into anyone over there?
You do. You do have to guard against it. And in order to do that, your mindset has to be such or oriented in a way of remembering, the successful accomplishments that we've had, whether it just be this past season or before that. But there is an element though still of we have to compare ourselves or evaluate ourselves against the best two teams right now, right? And what they do, what their personnel looks like, how they do it, so on and so forth, because that is that is the litmus test. And so So there is an element of diving into that, and the Chiefs in this case and their personnel and the way they do things coaching wise, or just, you know, across their building, and then also with the Philadelphia Eagles. So there is some of that, but I do think that it's got to be well-rounded enough that you don't get yourself into a mental pit, so to speak.
So we don't want to ask you anything that you just had to answer here in the last hour, and we were able to watch most of that. We were just talking as you called, like, when do we just sort of get over Sunday and not talk about, like, the plays and the details of the game. If you don't mind, a couple of questions about the game, though. I wonder, was there something defensively that you expected to go, like, meaningfully better? I mean, Kansas City had, for them, it seemed more of a trying year on offense, but they were able to score over 30 points Sunday. Was there something, as you prepared for the game, that you thought you had in the matchup that didn't come to fruition?
Well, you're always confident going into a game when you spend, you know, all week shaping a game plan, right? No different than the Denver game against a good offensive coach, a good head coach in Sean Payton, or the Baltimore game against Lamar and John Harbaugh. You go into a game shaping a game plan that you feel like it's going to give you the best chance to win. And there's got to be a complementary piece, meaning, you know, all three phases working together to defeat the opponent overall. But I would say that probably the biggest challenge we faced was when they started to, and it was clear that they were wanting to get the ball out fast, whether it was by RPOs or quick game passes. You know, we were going to have to tighten it up and go man-to-man in order to at least try and win some second down and longs or first downs to put us in second and long to get into some third downs or third downs and third and long. So I think that's really where, you know, they started to get the production that they did is in some of those situations.
How much did what they did surprise you? A couple of players on both sides of the ball, to my ears, Sunday night. I know it's a long time ago now. I mean, it's only 4 days, but it feels like it's been a month just dwelling on it. But guys sounded, offensive players and defensive players, surprised by some of what Kansas City did. If you agree with that assessment, how do you avoid that? Like, do you look at that and think, I should have been better? We all as coaches should have been better. We should have, spent more time. I mean, there's only so much time in the day. Like, how do you avoid being, not prepared for something?
Yeah, I think I'm going to walk that back a little bit. Not prepared isn't an overstatement. Every game, I wouldn't say every game, but I would say 80% of games at this level, there's something that the other coaching staff does that is trying to surprise the other opponent, right, the other team. And in this case, there were a couple of, call it, unscouted looks. That being said, you know, we try and prepare our players for every possible situation that could come up, and we prepare them game plan-wise, but we also prepare them from a standpoint of, hey, if you come across an unscouted look, this is what your default is. Kind of like rules of engagement, right? Mm-hmm. So, and the way we teach our players and what we ask them to do is, when that happens, you BSU in a physical manner, which stands for blow. I don't want to say the next,
yeah, gotcha,
blow, you know what, up. Yeah. And that's what you do in the game of football. If you come across an unscouted look, you default to your rules. And then you blow, you know what, up in a physical manner. Because usually when you do that in this game, good things happen.
How much of a factor, if at all, in that sort of preparation, do you think the bye week is? Something that you guys, despite having an excellent season this year and other really good seasons that are comparable, have just not been able to get there. Kansas City has been in the way of that. How much of a factor is the extra week of preparation that they would have had at the end that you were not afforded?
Great question. You know, I would say, Bulldog, that the most important piece to getting the bye, and I've been there, you know, multiple times and having the bye, is the rest for the players and somewhat the coaches, right, and staff, and but certainly the players. You know, they go all season long. It's a long year. It got extended a few years ago, another week, and you're playing a long season. You know, that being said, it's not the end-all, be-all. You see teams every season make it to and win the Super Bowl who just play at a level that it doesn't matter whether you had the bye or not, right? You're talking about the level of play on any given day or any given Sunday in this case. And so is the bye, would it be great to have? Yes. Is the end-all, be-all? Not necessarily.
I mean, this is not something you need to be told. Just thinking about how fine the line is. I mean, Bulldog and I are going to talk about this again this offseason for months and just scrutinizing all different facets of it. I was talking to a friend in Minnesota about Kevin O'Connell, who was on the Rams staff when the Rams won. And he, at one point, my guy Matt Collar asked him about, like, sort of what happened, you know, that year. And he said, the thing I think about in winning a Super Bowl is how many times we came so close to not. Whether it's the game itself or the San Francisco game before that, Tampa, other rounds, just sort of getting the breaks. And I doubt you or anybody in your profession wants to think about how random stuff is sometimes, but it's there, you know? Like, that's something that we'll be talking about and maybe fending off mostly this year, is the idea that, you know, you do need to get a little lucky.
No doubt. And I used to work for a guy named Jim Johnson, who's no longer with us, and he would always say, and I was a younger coach at the time in Philadelphia, and he was an older coach, a veteran coach, I should say, he would always say, you got to be a little lucky, you got to get a little lucky. And, you know, at the time I was so naive, I'd be like, we'll be fine and this and that. But, you know, over the course of time, you grow and you're like, you know what, you do need things to line up a little bit, you know. You know, you look at the Ravens situation, right, with a 2-point conversion, and you know, so there's things that do come into play from time to time, and you do need to get a little bit lucky. And I hate saying that because I never rely on luck, but it certainly is a nice cherry on top from time to time.
Just a few minutes left with Sean McDermott. One question I have about the offense going into next year, and I think maybe you got this question or something about it toward the end earlier, is stretching the field. It was, with all the success, I mean, franchise record in points and second in the league, I wondered at times if the Bills had enough punch when it came to, you know, vertically. And is that something that, like, you would agree with? Or, you know, come on, Mike, we scored 529 points, 29 points in the loss. You're never perfect, I'm sure you would say, but I wonder if you want more of that next year.
I think that's something we definitely have to look at, Mike, and you know, when you look at the analytics of it and the numbers, you know, we were aware of that. I was aware of it during the course of the season, in particular, you know, more so at other times where it was definitely, and we haven't been able to get one down the field in quite some time, several weeks, what have you. It is something that we have to look at. And because of the defensive, these defenses evolving into more cover two, split safety looks, sometimes that inhibits, you know, the ability to throw the ball down the field. But, you know, more and more we're starting to see less cover two because of potentially our run game, which to me is a good thing, because that should free us up to take some shots in one-on-one situations down the field, to your point. And they don't always have to be, you know, goal balls down the sideline, but they can be, you know, deep over routes, what have you. And, you know, sometimes those were taken away. We tried them, but they were taken away. And other times, maybe we didn't connect and execute the way we wanted to.
Sean, it was noticeable to me listening to both your and Brandon Bean's appearances with the media today that you struck a similar chord on Dalton Kincaid. You know, not about, you know, consoling him about, you know, not catching that last pass, but about the year he had and about getting stronger and bigger. And I just wonder if that was something that you were looking for him to do last offseason, and did he not come through in some way, or is this something new after year two that you're feeling like he needs to do some work in the lab, so to speak, you know, in the gym, and sort of just put on a little more muscle mass?
Well, it's funny because, you know, Dalton was, he's one of our hardest workers, and we usually hand out some offseason awards in terms of, you know, workout warrior, I guess, for lack of a better word, type of awards. And he's put in a lot of time. And so that's, you know, we've got to find another way perhaps, or double down on that to help him, number one, make it through a season, but number two, also improve his play strength, right? And, you know, some of these guys, like I mentioned, come out of college and they're not asked to lift as much or they don't have that background. But, you know, we got to find something that works to be able to help him, like I said, from an availability standpoint and then also from a play strength standpoint.
Sean, if you don't mind, there's a movement in Bills fans and maybe a lot of other teams. They're going to boycott the Super Bowl. They say they're tired of it. They're tired of these teams. Will you definitely watch, if you don't mind the question? Will you definitely? I have skipped a couple myself. I'm here to tell fans, like, you could do it. Will you watch the game?
Like fans, my first inclination is I don't want to see one drop of the teams that are playing. No disrespect. It's just that's just the competitor in me. I think what I'll skip is all of the run-up or watching, you know, the planes land, and because that's, you know, having been in the Super Bowl a few times, that's part of the experience that I wanted and still want for our fans, for the Pegula family, for our players, our staff, and that's part of the experience, and that's what makes it so much fun, the excitement leading up to the game, right, all the preparation. So I will definitely not... I will definitely make sure that I turn the channel if I see any semblance of that on TV over the next couple of days and next week. But the game itself is an area that we can all learn from. And my iPad will be next to me, and I just believe in that. Like, you just see, hey, whether it's, you know, this way that the game was managed or this type of play concept or this collection of personnel, so on and so forth. I just think you can take something out of it, especially when the two best teams at this point in the NFL are playing together here.
We didn't know each other, but we were at the Super Bowl together in Jacksonville. You mentioned having been to a few with the Eagles back in 05. I had a nice conversation with John Harbaugh that week, just sort of randomly, the media day scene. But that staff, it's yourself, Harbaugh, of course, Andy Reid. You mentioned Johnson, who has ties to our area. And even Steve Spagnuolo was on that staff in Philadelphia. Pretty good.
No, great staff. I mean, I don't know if there will ever be a staff with that many guys that went on to become head coaches again. I mean, Andy did a phenomenal job of constructing that staff. And I think one of the biggest things I learned was, you got to know what you're doing. You got to have a certain level of competence, but you also have to have a certain type of person on your staff, and the collaboration and all that goes into it is huge. I mean, it's, and then, you know, like, one of the other things was just the standard that he held us all to on a day-to-day basis. And so it's hard to win unless every person, every department is willing to hold themselves to that standard.
Well, congrats on a fine season, Sean. Thanks for your time today, and enjoy the break to whatever extent you can, and hopefully it's long enough for you. Thanks.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate you guys, and we're going to continue to work to get ourselves back there and eventually lift this trophy that we're all trying to lift here.
All right. Thanks again, Sean.
Thank you.
Sean McDermott on the Western Hotline here on WGR.
It's Sal Capaccio.
I make a special carpaccio for you, right?
Oh, now that sounds really good.
Oh, you like?
Hey, get away from my wife with that.
What's the matter, carpaccio no good?
What do you do now?
They don't like a carpaccio.
They like carpaccio.
Oh. On WGR.
I make a carpaccio for you.
Sports Radio 550.
Welcome back. We got the golf on in here. Always count on Bulldog to remember on Thursdays to turn on the golf. And there's the same guy in that crane as last week. We saw this guy, this cameraman in this crane way up in the sky.
Yeah.
Just saw him again. They're at Pebble this week.
That guy's getting paid appropriately.
No Josh Allen, though, this year?
No. I heard, early in the week already, I had heard that he wasn't going to be going this year. So
Sal Capaccio with us on the West Her Hotline. I don't know that we found out anything today, but is Allen injured? What do you know or think you know, Sal, on whatever happened to him on Sunday?
He said on
Monday when we spoke with him that he had to get his hand checked out by doctors. He, you know, had injured it during the game. I think it might have happened on the one of the two-point play where they tried with him and it didn't go well. I think it was that play particularly. But Brandon Bean said today that in his exit interview with Josh, that didn't come up. So my guess is he's fine. You know what I mean? Like he had some bumps and bruises, and you know he was had a bit of an injury there during the game, and maybe was dealing with it, but nothing to be, you know, worried about, I guess.
Okay,
maybe just it's sore enough that he's not playing golf this week at Pebble Beach. That's just me guessing. I don't know.
Or the Pro Bowl,
right?
Skip that too.
Yeah, he's not playing the Pro Bowl either.
Well, so that is what it is. How about for you today overall, Sal? On Bean first, I guess, since he went first. What are one or two of the most important takeaways for you?
My biggest takeaway was what he said about Keon Coleman. I thought it was very interesting, and I don't remember Brandon Bean, and very rarely many GMs, kind of using that verbiage and literally saying that he was disappointed in kind of the play after turn from injury. Now, listen, he also made it known, hey, young player, never been through something like that. There's, you know, to come back from that and the mental part and the physical part, all of it hand in hand. You know, I'm paraphrasing, but this is what I got from him there. But I thought that was really interesting. He said that it wasn't as much of the physicality, and they had definitely talked about it in his exit interview. And I'm just envisioning how that went, which is basically like, hey, you got to be better than that when you come back and be ready to play and professional or whatever. I'm just guessing. Like that's an interesting conversation to me to be a fly on the wall. But for him to use that language was very interesting to me.
Yeah, because you don't get a lot of that, do you, in these?
Right. It sounds like you think they might have, scolded too strong a word. Like it sounds like maybe they gave him, rightfully so, maybe a hard time.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess that'd be a leap of, you know, me. That'd be conjecture, right? I really don't know. But they definitely had to talk about it, right? And again, it also could be, hey, we know you're young. You're going to learn here, right? Like we get it. Like we've had players go through ups and downs, young players. And I would guess it is true, you know, that anybody who's ever had never had an injury, never. And I think Keon actually had talked about when he came back, he had never been hurt in his life that. You know, that's got to be something to really try to get over. But that was something that was very interesting for me. You guys talked about the Dalton Kincaid stuff, which I'd like to get into because you guys made a point about Dawson Knox, which I'm not on the same page as you on that. So I'd like to talk about that. But good. I did think it was interesting how he mentioned about Dalton Kincaid and needing to get physically stronger, and that will help his body, durability as well. And then, you know, I think that just his overall message about... You know, I guess I came out, it was therapeutic, I think, a lot of ways, guys, to be honest with you.
Uh-huh.
Like, if you're a Bills fan and you hear the GM say, like, we're not going to slow down, we're going to keep swinging, we're not resetting, we're not rebuilding, like, we're right there. And it just fuels us to keep going more. Like, you could have that, but you could also hear the tone of, man, like, you know, we may have to make some changes here, and we're going to see. And that was, maybe even last year you heard a little bit of that.
Yeah.
No, that wasn't the case this year. It was, hey, we're right there. Some plays didn't go our way. We are going to keep swinging is literally the words he said.
I liked how you phrased a question, something that we talked about yesterday, how I said, like, by, you know, on Monday I was still feeling pretty bad. Tuesday I woke up feeling like they're in way better shape this offseason than they were at this time last year. And I know you got into that with Bean, and I'm trying to remember if he concurred with that sort of general assessment.
He did. He also said, we won't be big spenders, but as you guys have pointed out, he's said
that
before.
All the time,
but,
right?
Right. I think that, you know, last year where they were, and he kind of alluded to, you know, where the roster is now, he said the difference. This is interesting, and just something to note. He did say that there's not as many levers there's not as many levers to pull this year as there were last year to make some things happen, right?
And
they had those last year.
Right, that's right. Right.
Correct. But they kind of knew that, which is why they did what they did last year, right? Like, they did last year. A lot of things they did last year was because they knew they wouldn't have that chance this year, if that makes sense. So they kind of gave themselves, they were a year ahead of, the way I'm interpreting it. Like, hey, we had to get ahead of it because we knew this year we wouldn't be able to do those things. We didn't want to be in that position where we had to and we had no other option. So we kind of gave ourselves an opportunity. He also talked about Josh Allen, his contractual situation, because obviously Josh isn't necessarily paid in line with the other elite quarterbacks in the league. And he said there's going to be a time and place for that. And he says he has a very good relationship with Josh and, you know, his reps, and they'll talk about those things as they go on.
Allen's cap number in 2026 is almost $64 million. This year it's 43. So might expect some sort of a restructure there. On Kincaid, Sal, since you brought that up, my inference was just to speculate on whether that could be a sign that they plan to move on from Knox. There would be dead cap money if they did that, but they would also be able to save several million. Thinking about, you know, the idea that they want Kincaid to get bigger, but that's not a thought you would have shared?
No, because I don't know if you guys, you may have not have, you know, heard these parts of it, but the one thing that really stood out was how much both Bean and McDermott really talked about Dawson Knox and how valuable he is to this team. Like, I came out of that press conference going, Dawson Knox isn't going anywhere. Like, they love having him on this team. And Sean even said, you don't know the things he does for us. Like, people don't see it. He was even asked to give, like, an example of a player or two that I can't remember the exact question. It might have been Cather Fitzgerald who asked, and I don't remember the exact way. And, like, a lot of times you don't get specific players, but McDermott went right to Dawson Knox for this one, like, example of a player who does this or that. And I'll even say, like, they need a guy like Dawson Knox after what you heard them say about Dalton Kincaid, right? Like, that, to me, that's part of the reason why Dawson Knox is still doing what he's doing for this team, is because they need, from what they said, you know, they want Dalton Kincaid to get bigger and stronger. They don't have that on the roster unless, you know, they have Dawson Knox to do that right now.
Right.
And he's a big part of what they do. So I came out of it the exact opposite. Like, I thought, even, you know, if you would have asked me, and you're right, Mike, look at the contract, right? There's definitely things that if you get out of it, there's money, blah, blah, blah. If you would have asked me a couple of weeks ago and say, yeah, I guess there's a chance. I don't know if they would. Like, I'm totally out on that now because of what I heard them say about Dawson Knox.
Yeah. I wish I had had the thought to follow up on McDermott when I asked him about how both he and Bean made the same point about Kincaid, you know, putting on weight, getting bigger and stronger. Yes, the durability, you know, he got banged up this year. Last year, I don't think he had any real injury problems. So it's not like you got a pattern here. He just had a rough year. I'm really wondering, like, what, you know, they drafted him to be a certain type of player to complement Knox. And, like, you know, my brain didn't do what Mike's did. I didn't think, like, oh, Knox could be in trouble on the roster. But I just think, asking Kincaid, like, it's a delicate balance. If you want him to be Cole Beasley in a tight end's body, I don't know. Yeah, get stronger, be more durable, sure, but there's a balance there. Like, you don't want to lose the athleticism. Mm-hmm. That's what made him a first-round pick. That's why he was appealing to them in the first place. Best pass catcher in the draft. So, I don't know. Like, where's the line there is something I'm kind of curious about.
For sure. I'll address that in 1 second. I do have the question. It was Cather Fitzgerald. I looked. She wrote. She asked Sean McDermott if there were any players or coaches that exceeded expectations, and he immediately went to Dawson Knox. That was McDermott.
Okay.
And then what Bean said about him was, no one is more selfless. You need guys like Knox on a team to win a championship. People go to Dawson Knox. They believe in Dawson Knox. Like, to me, those are things that are just screaming, like, he's not going anywhere, right? He's a big part of the core of what we do here. So when it comes to Kincaid, yeah, I think there's a few things about this, you know, stronger physically and all those kinds of things they talked about. He was banged up this year, there's no doubt. And Bean talked about how tough he is and he had to play through this stuff. And I think a lot of it was referencing more of, look, if he gets stronger and bigger, like, he'll be able to absorb a little bit more, right? His body will be able to take on more. He will be more durable. But to your point, which is right, on the field, you don't want to lose that. But I think what you want is a guy who can be the mismatch you envisioned, which, if he's not getting bigger and stronger and he's not great at the point of attack or a threat to block, how much of a mismatch can he be? The whole point of drafting him at the time was, we want to lead into 12 personnel. And if we have these two tight ends who can beat you both in the blocking game and the passing game, then you're going to have to really be in a bind when we play. Well, if you have a guy who's really not that, because he's not giving you a threat as much as a physical player, then I think that takes a little bit of that away. So I agree with you. I don't think they want him to necessarily put his hand on the ground and be blocking all the time, but I think they would like to have a little bit more of a threat and the ability for him to be in those situations more on the field and to be more durable.
Better able to take punishment, it seems, too, like, that along those lines. Interestingly, Kincaid with double the catches of Knox this year, exactly 44-22, came in well below Knox in yards per reception. Like, you think of Kincaid, the idea of him is, has been discussed here, is more down the field, but 10.2 ranks pretty low on the roster.
Can I say my issue has been with the whole conversation about, we had a really good debate in the media room today about Kincaid. And I said to a bunch of my colleagues, I said, the guy had one of the most historic rookie seasons in NFL history for a tight end. I got pushback on that. I'm like, but he had at the time, he had the fourth most catches ever for a rookie tight end in 50 plus years of professional football. To me, that is a great rookie season. You would sign up for that anytime you take a tight end for your first round pick. The issue, now some people disagreed, well, it's not a high bar to clear, whatever. My issue is, when they drafted him, they had this plan. If you're going to draft a first-round tight end, then you are drafting him to be this really big focal point of your offense, like a Brock Bowers, like a mm-hmm. Sam LaPorta. That hasn't materialized. But I think part of that was Ken Dorsey was here. Now it's Joe Brady. But since you did invest that, and since you did feel that way about him, I think you do have to kind of have a bit of a different philosophy on he can't just be part of the everybody eats dinner plate. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think he's got to be more than that.
Not a lot of time left here, Sal. One thing I thought was interesting from talking to McDermott today, asking him what, in essence, what did Kansas City do offensively Sunday that you didn't really expect, you know, kind of like that. We each asked questions along those lines. He did give an answer. Ultimately, he said they got the ball out fast, and so he had to pivot to man-to-man defense, and maybe that was something that they weren't really prepared for.
Well, yeah, and he pushed back on the word unprepared, right? When Bulldog said that,
right?
For sure, it was unexpected, I guess, right? I guess that was unexpected. I don't think you don't go unprepared because prepared is okay. We'll go to man to man, but the Bills weren't equipped to do that, and especially after Christian Benford left the game. I asked him specifically today about Kyer Elam. I thought that was revealing too. Like, I thought they were both. Listen, Bean went for an hour and 15. Sean went for an hour with us. I know he was on for 25 minutes with you guys. And, you know, he said they tried zone, they tried man. It just obviously didn't go their way with Kyer Elam on the field. But you're right. And I remember Greg Rousseau, maybe it was, right after the game, also saying, on top of what he said about, you know, the stuff they did, that, like, right away, or AJ, it was AJ Epinesa, said, first play, they went RPO. And he knew, okay, right away, they're doing quick game today. Like, that's something they had to adjust and pivot to that maybe mm-hmm. they weren't expecting. Doesn't mean they were unprepared. Mm-hmm. They were unexpecting, which means they had to go to something different, which they weren't as equipped for, and give the Kansas City Chiefs credit because they probably saw the Bills weren't as equipped to counter that.
All right, Sal, we'll let you go. Thanks for your time.
You got it, guys.
That's our dude, Sal Capaccio, on the Western Hotline. His appearances are always brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
Lines are open at 803-0550. Looking ahead to the offseason, of course, we're already there, but also talking about Sunday a little more. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. This is WGR.